There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
I just don't really understand why more fairy tales don't have, like, lesbian parts. Yeah. Like, why isn't there not a Snow White thing where you, like, open up the lid of her coffin and it's a princess, and sure, to wake her up, she's got to eat her out.
Kind of a hot thing there. People can't handle it. There's a gay character in the new Beauty and the Beast, which is literally a story about a woman having sex with a human buffalo, and the people are upset that there's a gay character in it, friends with Gaston.
The nerdy one from Harry Potter is getting gaped by a buffalo man, and we're upset because Gaston wants to get kissed on by a tiny fat.
Oh, no. All right, welcome to the show, everyone. This is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hey, hey.
And fans have commented how we've always introduced you as a guest, Henry. And so
I know. With us, I'm special guest. It's nice, though, because it kind of boosts my confidence. All right, allows me to be more free.
That's good. I'm very happy that your confidence is boosted. All right, well, speaking of, I guess, boosting of confidence, oh, L. Yeah. Ron Hubbard's confidence is growing. We're on to part three of The Strange and Wild Life of L. Ron Hubbard.
Can I make a thesis statement up top? Can you give me a bit of a grad student moment?
Sure.
Okay. Now, I think what's important about covering L. Ron Hubbard specifically in the Scientology story, we're going to be covering a little bit of Scientology today. If you really want to know about it, you spend the fucking hours of research. Because I have tried to read several L. Ron Hubbard books and going through the tone scale and going through auditing and all the fucking PTS and all that bullshit, right? It's inanity. It hurts your brain.
Yeah.
But when I have watched documentaries, specifically the Leah Remini story and Jason Begay, both actors that came out publicly against Scientology after being in it for years,
right?
They all have the same problem. They can't speak badly of L. Ron Hubbard. They hate David Miscavige.
Right.
They hate what the brainwashing has done to them and the idea of disconnection, but they still have a hard time in saying that L. Ron Hubbard was anything but a Jesus figure. But what we're trying to do here is show that he's just a flip-floppy, fucking soft-bodied man,
yeah,
who made up bullshit until becoming a millionaire.
Absolutely.
And they bought it.
You know, it's very, I mean, that is so interesting with the cult. Even the people who are now SPs that have left the cult, they still can't do it either. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how strong this indoctrination is. We were at the Scientology tent at the Salt Lake City Comic Con, which was amazing,
well,
by the way.
Well, it was technically the L. Ron Hubbard tent.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And it was really fascinating to see those individuals in real life after we've been talking about them for all these weeks. The woman was dead-eyed. They did give us free buttons,
yeah, they
which
did.
Were cool.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing was, Marcus, we were there, and how they were trying to entice the kids was they wanted us to sign up for a free science fiction challenge.
Yeah, it was
an author.
It was a writing contest that, you know, people that were aspiring sci-fi writers could enter and possibly gain fame and fortune from. And they,
right,
also gave us a little booklet that was a catalog of every L. Ron Hubbard book ever written. They even had Buckskin Brigades in there.
They're not even ashamed of Buckskin Brigades. They love Buckskin Brigades.
They love Buckskin Brigades. Also, the beginning of L. Ron Hubbard's Science of Humanity was Science of Survival, which is going to eventually be the backbone of Scientology. Thanks, Commander Snake Johnson. It thanks him in it, too. It's full of shit. The whole thing's full of shit. But I just remember because it's like, we never got to meet Jesus if Jesus was real,
right?
We never got to meet Muhammad if Muhammad was real. But the thing is, we have actual documents on L. Ron Hubbard. Mm-hmm. We know he was full of shit.
Yeah.
And this is the story of that trail of shit, like a diaper's been split open by a razor, which is a bad thing to do to a child.
Absolutely, and a diaper.
Now, when we last left L. Ron, he had landed in Wichita, Kansas from Elizabeth, New Jersey, under the care of a millionaire real estate developer and true believer of Dianetics named Don Purcell.
Also remember, he paid to fly L. Ron Hubbard from Cuba. He's been sitting in Cuba for like 2 months with Richard DeMille, who is Cecil B. DeMille's like grandson, who became like his like coterie, like his fucking little assistant. And apparently he would go to Ron's door and knock on it because he was the only one who had access to him. And Ron would open it with a glass. He'd open it with a .45. He brought a gun with him,
huh,
to Cuba, which you could do back in the day because it was easier, because you could just wear a gun and like basically airport security was like, nice gun. And he'd be like,
right,
thank you. And then he went and he'd answer the door and he's like, never sneak up on me, Dick. You don't know what I'll do.
That's kind of cool, though. That's the coolest story we've heard so far of Elrod. He's living like Hunter S. Thompson.
See, shit had gone south in Elizabeth, New Jersey, where they had started the first Dianetic Center. That shit had gone south real fast, as Hubbard was terrible with money, and he was looking for a bit of a do-over. He founded the Hubbard Dianetic Foundation of Wichita, and Purcell was expected to pay for the whole goddamn thing without question. Hmm. And through the HDFW, Hubbard published his second book under the Dianetics banner, Science of Survival.
And oh God!
So no, this is an actual brick and mortar institution,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. He's starting. This is the beginning of him setting up little Dianetics foundations and eventually Scientology foundations all over the world.
He learned that this is how you spread it. It's basically you create franchises.
Yeah,
right. He flipped it like McDonald's, where it's like now you can run your own branch of Scientology, but then he has to come and check up on every once in a while, and he has to send his like super loyal acolytes. Now this fucking idiot Purcell is just hemorrhaging money because he's pulling a real fucking Chips and JoJo going out there, and he's covering these fucking these new buildings in Wichita with all of the shiplap that he could find, and they got new pergolas. Everything's looking real nice and ship shape, real fixer upper style.
Yeah. Right. Now, Science of Survival, which continued the trend of each book being more indecipherable than the last, focused quite a bit on the tone scale.
Ooh.
Oh,
what's
no,
that?
Marcus. Not MJP, no. Not the tone scale.
I love the tone scale.
HTZ, don't come at me with that, all right?
I don't know what to tell you, MJP, all right? Because it comes down to the breakdown of the tone scale is one of the most inherently important factions of Scientology. And if we mess this up, no one's going to be clear.
Oh,
we're not
wow.
getting any wins today.
Oh,
there
are
no wins for any of our listeners if they can't understand the tone scale.
No wins, no gains.
Well, they'll understand the tone scale, Marcus. You know how to teach them.
Now, the tone scale is, as far as I can interpret, because this shit is extremely difficult to understand, which is the whole point, tone scale is a meter of different states of physical and emotional being ranked from 40 to negative 40.
Ooh.
And those are big numbers.
Those are huge numbers.
That's 80 numbers.
Yeah.
Those are numbers.
That's kind of fun because...
Remember this. He is now, what he did was he took Dianetics and he blew it out, right? But Dianetics started with four zones and that you have to go up the four zones. He's now made 80 different zones. So you're just getting more for your money. You know what I mean? You're making money now buying in because he increased the amounts of zones. Also, he's increased the amounts of tenets from there were originally four tenets of Dianetics to now with the Science of Survival, there's now eight tenets of Scientology, which is what they're going to be drilled on for the rest of their life.
And this is how you make oodles and oodles and oodles of money.
I mean, every single time there's something new, yep. And it always improves upon, if not outright changes, what came before.
It's actually very similar to what colleges do nowadays.
Yeah.
There are so many damn classes. You really only need four: science, math, English, and an elective. But now they have everything you want.
I've always said school is a scam.
It is kind of a scam.
Now, the bottom of the tone scale is total failure. That's negative 40.
And that's worse than death.
Yeah. Between negative 40 and zero, you've got states like sacrifice at negative 6, hiding at negative 8.
Wait, hold on. What's hiding?
It's hiding.
Just hiding? Just like I'm just like a kid and be like, my dad's coming home in 5 minutes. I'm going to hide in the car. I'm going to hide in the trunk of the car. And then it turns out your dad's drunk and he wants to drive. Next thing you know, you're getting rear-ended and you're dead in the trunk of your dad's car because all you wanted to do was hide. And now you're a negative 8.
That's why it's a negative 8.
I see.
Yeah, and that's a scene. That's a sin. You did bad. All right, you need to confess those sins. You need an OW write-up, my friend.
I'm sorry.
Then you've got needing bodies, owning bodies, and controlling bodies. That's negative 4, negative 3, and negative 1.5.
Remember this, because bodies are bad in Scientology.
Okay.
Your body is just a big, sloppy, hairy vessel, horny, hard, little fucking, like, bearded vessel.
Yeah, you don't want it.
No, you don't want it. You don't want your bacony smelling, like my pubes too long kind of body. Like you want to free that. You want to crack that open so your theta can get out.
No, I understand what you're talking about regarding like your body and my body and most of Marcus's body. But what if you're like The Rock or like, you know, John Cena? Like you have
a bad body.
That's still a bad body.
Still a bad body, yep. Because you've also got blame, shame, and pity. That's negative 1, negative 0.2, and negative 0.1.
By the way, I just had a great revelation. John Cena, what's his catchphrase? You can't see me. He's hiding. He's a negative 8, and he's got a great body. He's probably a negative 11.
He's an SP.
That's an SP
right there.
But he's a positive person to the naked eye, but in reality, he's an SP.
Suppressive personality.
Can't see me. Wow.
The 0.0 is body death, which implies that feeling pity is somehow worse than death itself.
Body death is just kind of put in there at a zero. And it seems like he started at a zero, and then he started figuring out, I think we really need some negatives in here to really push the fact that it's negative. And they're like, all right, you love numbers.
I get
just
it.
Write your fake ass numbers.
Now, apathy, grief, propitiation, despair, fear, and anxiety are also a bit better, but still worse than the most common state, covert hostility, which is 1.1.
Okay. Or 1.1. Now, it's very common to call people a 1-1. If someone's gone 1-1, it means that they are a they're bad. And the covert hostility, technically what it means is that it's somebody that can smile at you and then stab you in the back. And it's the most distrustworthy. It's a terrible person.
But this is not a negative. We are in the positives here.
We're still technically. Technically we're in the positive,
but it's negative.
We're also gay.
You're gay. All three of us are gay?
No, that's what 1.1 is. 1.1, covert hostility, is also the level that homosexuals sit at, and this is where the gay cure of Scientology comes in.
And I love that we include this. No one realizes Scientology is extremely homophobic.
Extremely homophobic.
But it is interesting with the negatives being better than death, mm-hmm. Or being worse than death, you know, because that does lead to that mentality of if you leave, when people talk about leaving the cult, it being a suicide.
Yeah.
Also, the back of this, you got to remember, what we're going to get to is that we're including past lives. When it comes to like the negative realms, you have to take hours of courses to understand that is the cumulative engrams of billions of lives you've led.
You're getting way ahead of yourself here. We got...
This is, by the way, I said Marcus was going to explain everything. I am very confused, but I'm getting it. So
you're getting it. We cannot bring past lives into it just yet.
Okay, good.
We've got to understand the tone scale first.
I am a billion years in the past right now. I'm sorry. I had a bunch of that Trader Joe's coffee concentrate. Natalie explained to me after I've already had two full cups of it that it's supposed to be watered down.
Yes, I learned that hard lesson as well the other day. I was up for about 30 hours straight.
I am a human drum solo right now. Like, I am the song Wipeout.
All right, so we got the negatives, zero being the death, where it's a 1-1, and this is homosexuality.
Yeah, we're at 1-1, because, I don't really know how homosexuality is considered covert hostility, but this is still where they put gay people. And where the gay cure comes in is that if you are able to move up the tone scale past 1.1... not gay anymore.
This is Michelle Bachman, Marcus Bachman, gay conversion therapy. Yeah. This is like very Republican and very evangelical Christian in a way.
Very much so.
Well, yeah, and because a 1.2 is called still desperately hungry for cock. Because that's just where you are. Because they get you up. Because no matter what you do, no matter how clear you are, you're still going to be a homosexual person because you're born that way. You can't change it. There's no yelling at an ashtray that is going to fix wanting to make love to the person that you love.
What if you'd be like, be a dick. Be a human penis.
You could turn anything into a penis if you put it inside yourself.
I guess
then
so.
Then chaos magically, you've made it a penis.
I see.
So, but you're also the in science of survival. He specifically states really quickly, because I try to read this. He states really quickly that if anybody is under a 2.0 on the tone scale, they deserve no civil rights and should be immediately destroyed.
This is a man that Hollywood, the supposed liberal elites in Hollywood, have fallen in love with. He is the deity of the left in Hollywood, and this is the truth behind what he actually thinks.
I wouldn't say he's the deity of the left in
absolutely.
Hollywood. I'd say he's the deity of, like, John Travolta.
And who is the deity of Hollywood if not,
who is the Peter of Hollywood, John Travolta.
Tom Cruise and John Travolta were the two biggest names in Hollywood for decades and decades, and L. Ron Hubbard was the god.
Yeah, but not anymore. Now John Travolta is perennially made fun of for his hairpiece. He's slathered with cum because he's just let the guards off because he's just having sex with every masseuse and pilot he could get his grippers on, which I think he should.
He should. Sure. John Travolta should be himself. We've said that on page 7 thousands of times.
Well, he did very well in the O.J. Simpson documentary.
Yes, he absolutely did.
Yeah.
So if you're moving up the tone scale, you go from covert hostility, then you go through states like boredom, disinterested, mild interest, cheerfulness, action, games, and postulates.
What does that mean? What does postulates mean? Because he even says this in a footnote in Dianetics. Sometimes I'm going to verb, like, before anybody understands what he's doing, he's like, I'm going to verb nouns sometimes. And now, this is an uncommon practice, but I use it in order to more elucidate my points by just essentially just makes up words.
He does.
And says it means, he says words mean other things than they're supposed to mean, which is a central tenet of fascist thought, right? Because it's destroying your concept of reality immediately.
Truth, yeah.
And it's a hypnotic suggestion also. There's another whole concept called stacked realities that he uses, which is specifically confusing jargon and then hides messages in it. It's a hypnotic suggestion.
And
bullshit.
When you walk into a room and he's like, this is where we have all the bunk beds, this is where you'll be sleeping, and it's nothing but canoes. Isn't that wild? Like, no, that's a bed. I promise you, that's not a rowing boat.
So after you get to the highest state of the tone scale, up at 40, you have reached the serenity of beingness.
Ooh, that God. Does sound fun.
And apparently with serenity of beingness, it means you can tell someone to do something, and you can make someone do something against their own personal will and against their own personal sense of propriety. Like, and so in the end, the very top level of Scientology that you're supposed to read is being able to go up to someone and be like, tie your shoes. All right, untie your shoes. All right. Make love to me. And then right. It's like, and that's basically what they want.
Well, they call it tone 40. And that's also supposed to be something that auditors are able to reach. If they used, and they use tone 40 as like a verb. You've tone 40'd someone.
And so this basically allows you to be a total asshole, a total manipulative prick, and not feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Because you're at level 40.
Well, yeah, because then everybody else around you is a wog, right? Which a term is for us, the people that are inherently suppressive. We are a wog, which stands for Worthy Oriental Gentleman, which is a naval term. That is true. It's a naval term for people who hadn't crossed like certain meridians, and so and then they became something called like steelbacks, something fucking retarded. Ooh. But the wogs are bad.
Wogs sound kind of fun though, like a wombat dog.
It's a racial slur in the UK.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh well, I apologize to my friends overseas.
Quite an intense racial slur.
L. Ron Hubbard said it. We're not saying it. It's his word.
Now, all of this shit is made confusing on purpose by setting these arbitrary states that sound good but don't really mean anything. Hubbard is setting himself and his organization up as gatekeepers that are the only ones that can help you decipher all of this.
It's like the Upright Citizens Brigade. Theater school.
Improv school. Yeah,
it's like improv. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is a situation where it's like a city planner is just like, we're going to make the lights all weird and the streets all wrong, and then we're the only place that's going to sell maps. You know, that's really what it is. You just mess up everything and be like, what? You got to come to us for answers. It's very
also,
simple.
Mm-hmm. It goes to the very beginning of the fucking Christian church when they started printing the Bibles in Latin because they knew that people could not read Latin. You needed to have a priest tell you what the Bible was saying.
Oh.
It's all about control of information. It's a cult thought. It's isolating people, specifically making them feel stupid, and that the only way that you could get fucking wozen up, hashtag woke, is to listen to fucking my ass.
It's kind of gaslighting in a way as well.
Yeah. So, after the publication of Science of Survival and the establishment of the HDFW, pilgrims started making their way to Kansas. And one of those pilgrims was a pretty little teenager from Texas named Mary Sue Whip.
I like her.
Yeah, she sounds like a fucking Russ Meyer character.
She does.
They call me Whip because I don't wear pants, just many whips on top of my shoes.
It's kind of fun.
Mary Sue Whip is actually like, she wasn't that, it's not that she was that attractive, but she was a true believer immediately, like diehard. Yeah,
she was 19 when she showed up.
Yeah.
And no, she showed up in the home where L. Ron Hubbard was staying?
She showed up in Wichita, Kansas at the Wichita, what is it called? The Hubbard Dianetics Foundation.
And so this had already reached Texas where she was, and this is before the internet, obviously. So this must have been a fairly large operation already.
This is like 1951, yeah. And I mean, Dianetics had made its way all the way across the nation. It was the number one bestseller. They're popping up all over the country.
Right.
So yeah, it's enough to reach a 19-year-old girl in Texas.
And inspire her to travel to Wichita, Kansas. Kansas, the future home of BTK.
For the man who is literally an orange jack-o'-lantern man with a captain's hat on. That you show up and you just think is the hottest, most interesting, charismatic man in the world, which just shows the power of just talking well. Mm-hmm. Like, if you could talk good and make good words, you can get Lizaid 24/7.
Also, yeah, just confuse them and have people look to you for answers, and you being the prize they seek.
So Hubbard took a shine to little Mary Sue almost immediately, and within a few weeks, the newly divorced burgeoning cult leader had a brand new chickie to warm his bed. And the two would be married soon afterwards, and she would stay by his side throughout his life, right up until her loyalty landed her in prison.
Wow.
Which we'll cover in part 4.
Do you mind if I pour myself into you? Excellent. You're my little vase. My sweet little vase. The flowers are the dookie.
This is different than I expected it to be, but...
Excellent. So do you mean better or worse? It's worse, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know it's bad. Now it's good.
Oh!
But despite the influx of believers, things weren't going any better in Wichita than they were in New Jersey. See, Don Purcell, the man footing the bill, had been at odds with Hubbard from the moment he arrived, as Hubbard had brought along a brand new angle to Dianetics that Purcell didn't jibe with: past lives. Now, as we discussed on the last episode, when a person was audited, they would travel back on their time track, sometimes going as far back as conception to look for Ingrams. But some people were starting to go even further, past conception into lives lived before, and L. Ron rolled with it perfectly.
Wouldn't you just go into your father's ball sack and then have to navigate that world like Martin Short?
I'm in my father's nutsack. We're listening to Rush. We're driving around in his 74 Duster. I can smell his jeans. Get me out of here. Get me out of here. He's drinking and driving and everyone's laughing about it. They think it's just relaxing.
I think they're about to pick up my mother.
Oh, God. I'm slapping against my mother's bottom part of her vagina.
So, how was your experience in auditing?
Refreshing.
Good, good.
Refreshing. I feel good. But also, think about this. Because people were in the auditing session, were just making shit up.
Yeah.
Right? So, you're forced to come up with shit all the time. You're auditing. So, you're making shit up. So, what L. Ron Hubbard does is... he automatically knows that you're making shit up in these auditing sessions, right? So he then flips it for you and says, no, you're not actually making shit up. I'm going to make you feel better about your own lies and tell you you're making up past lives. And they're like, whoa, I am. Because now they're fucking thousands of dollars deep.
Yeah, there are a lot of money in at this point.
And going back to what you were talking about with UCB, this is Del Close, this is Improv 101.
Say yes.
Yes, and. That's what I do when I read a menu. I say, I'll have the chimichanga, yes, and the bean burrito.
So you mean to tell me I only have to spend about $3,500 to be on an improv team with a bunch of other admins and a couple of people who are convinced they'll be on Saturday Night Live called Mission Improvable?
That's correct.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So now if you just take your wheelchair over here, that would be wonderful.
See, this is how L. Ron magically turned these past lives into cold, hard cash. See, with a new life came a whole new set of Ingrams, and it expanded the process almost towards infinity. He even got into the game himself. One day, he showed up at a lecture with a considerable limp, and when people asked what had happened, he said that during an audit session, he had traveled on his genetic time track to a Civil War battle in which he had been wounded, but he hadn't had time to finish running the whole scenario, hence the limp.
And that's called you didn't finish your cause of action. What's the god damn it? Oh, there's so many Scientology terms. What's the Scientology term?
He didn't finish running the scenario.
He didn't. Running the reality, and he's fucking. It's like him coming and be like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I can't wear a shirt today." At one point about 4 billion years ago, I was a cute little Pomeranian, and man, those puppies were just
hungry and my nipples are unbelievably sore. Yeah. I was chock full of milk.
Cute Pomeranian, though, I'm sure.
Yes. I wish I could go back to the days of being full of milk. Can you imagine the money I'd save on milk?
Mm-hmm. Martin, Inner Space. Martin Short in Inner Space.
I love that movie.
Now, can you just explain really quick, Ingrams?
Ingrams, yeah. Ingrams are marks that are left on your brain that keep you from being a happy person. Ingrams are marks left on your brain in your reactive mind that are keeping you from becoming a fully and totally realized person. And so once you are able to identify the Ingrams that are in your reactive mind, you can refile those Ingrams in your analytical mind and delete them as if your brain was a computer. That is exactly where L. Ron Hubbard is right now with this stuff.
All right.
The pain doesn't hurt you. And now that you've had past lives to it, now you not only do you have to get rid of your Ingrams in this life, is that you got to go back and get rid of them each one of your past life as well, which creates the endless flow of money coming in. And meanwhile, Purcell is sitting around being like, this was just supposed to be kind of like therapy. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, I don't really understand. I was not a knight at the round table, even though I'm having images of it. But mostly I just think it's because I went to medieval times one time and I loved it. And I had many dreams about it because my section won. And it was really nice to feel the validation to be a part of a winning crowd.
I can't wait to go to medieval times.
Oh, this one out in New Jersey.
I'm going.
See, and and Purcell was also starting to get tired of Hubbard because Hubbard was starting to fuck with Purcell because L. Ron Hubbard was starting to do some kind of, he was starting to do weird, like almost faith healing type shit.
Right.
Where he would tell everyone in the audience, like, okay, everyone in this audience, you don't need your glasses anymore. Leave your glasses at the door in this bowl, and you will not need glasses anymore. And Purcell was blind as a fucking bat.
Yep.
So he goes, he takes off his glasses, he puts them in the bowl, and he's fumbling out of the room because he can't see anything, and L. Ron Hubbard is sitting there laughing at him.
There's also a very famous televangelist, Benny Hinn. Mm-hmm. He used to do a very similar thing, and he would whip people's canes out from underneath them, and he got multiple lawsuits because those people needed those canes. And their knees were all detached. They would go to the hospital and be like, what did you do to your knee? Be like, he took my cane. And he got sued. Well,
they only need those canes because they're PTSs and they're connected to some form of SP.
I think it's because they have a football injury.
Like, what a good way to fuck with a group of nerds and tell them they don't need their glasses anymore. Because you could totally do that in high school right now. Like, if in your school right now and there's a kid with glasses and you're remotely either a cool dude or a hot woman, you can be like, you don't need your glasses anymore. You're like, I don't. I'm pretty sure I need them. Like, I'm pretty certain. You don't need your glasses anymore. All right. So can we maybe go get a soda pop? Do people still do that? Hey, where'd you go? Hey! Oh, God! Oh, God! I'm in a world of clowns!
That's kind of fun, though. I always like it when I lose a contact. You can make anybody's face to be what you want it to be.
But Hubbard, before he could turn all that past lives bullshit and all of his faith-healing bullshit into his ultimate money-making scheme, Scientology, he had to settle present debts, as a court had ruled that the HDFW was ultimately responsible for the debts of the Elizabeth, New Jersey branch of Dianetics. And Purcell felt that the only course of action was bankruptcy, because at the end of the day, even though Purcell was a big believer in Dianetics, he was also still a businessman. He thought, yeah, all right, bankruptcy, we declare a bankruptcy, we have a do-over, it's totally fine. Hubbard, though, he refused to do that because he saw it as admitting failure.
You know, it's very interesting. This country it's rare. Bankruptcy is unique to America in a lot of ways. Germany doesn't have it, for example. And it is sort of like, erase my debts. And then they can just be like, bankruptcy. We have that in this country. You don't actually have to, like, be a magician. You just have to file paperwork and you can erase all of your debts. It doesn't have to be magical.
Because money is fake.
Yeah.
Because a part of that weird money is fake thing that you kind of like forget after a while, being like, debt's just a number on a computer screen and they just have us hostage to that, which is why capitalism works, right? That's the whole point, is that you're supposed to go make more money and have your back against the wall all the time. So you want to make more money and then you're just constantly working and you can never fucking, just where you're just a bunch of worker bees.
Well, money is
funneling money back.
Money da, is, comrade. Yeah. Da.
No, oh, my money is very real. Very real. One could argue it greatly improves your life.
No, money is fake. Give us your money. You don't need your money. Give us your money via Patreon. It's patreon.com/lastpodcast@theleft. You don't need your money.
For those that don't see, Henry is waving his hand in front of the camera. So hopefully
I'm tone-fortying you.
Oh, wow.
Just give us your money.
So in this whole bankruptcy fight, Hubbard was outvoted, bankruptcy was declared, Hubbard resigned, and established the Hubbard College on the other side of town, still in Wichita, Kansas. And Hubbard College would be the birthplace of what would become the centerpiece of Scientological belief, the E-meter. Now, the E-meter, still in use today, is a metal box operated by the auditor with a lighted dial, adjustment knobs to fiddle around with, and a wire connected to two cans that the person being audited would hold. The
auditor, it's essentially a lie detector.
Yeah, it has the same technology as a lie detector.
But
the,
way defunct. I mean, it doesn't actually indicate if you're lying or not. It's not accurate.
It does give readings.
That is true.
Gives readings. There is a dial on it, and it does do things with the dial on it.
The dial does jump at certain points. See, the auditor would then ask questions relevant to whatever level the auditee was currently on and interpret the reactions. And the E-meter did, in fact, read reactions. It's like Henry said. It's very similar to a lie detector test. It's like galvanic some other bullshit.
Yeah, but lie detectors also do your blood pressure and your heart rate and all of that shit, so it adds extra dimensions to it. But the E-meter just like kind of spikes, and the goal you're getting for, you want a floating needle. Like it spikes every time you have some sort of emotional reaction where it'll bump to the other side, and then you want to get it where you remembered something so much and you've cleared it. Right, where so you've sat in it and you no longer have any emotions attached to the energy to that memory anymore, so it just hovers.
So you sort of want it to be like a perfect dick pic on Grindr. You don't want a real rock hard, but you don't want a real softie.
You don't
softie.
Want a rock hard one because that's too committed, that's too aggressive.
Too aggressive.
You want it just to be full.
What could I be? You know, one of those. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, here are some examples of questions people might be asked during an audit or commands they might be given. What solid could others have others understand?
Watching a buddy's dog. That's a good solid, right? That's like a solid you could do for a buddy.
All right.
What wouldn't another mind others communicating with?
Ooh, that is, that, you know, it's just...
Is that like a Buddhist cone? Am I supposed to? Is it, if I answer the question, am I wrong? Is it one of those where?
What can you ask it again? I'm trying to.
What wouldn't another mind others communicating with?
What wouldn't another mind others communicating with? Jessica Simpson. What is Jessica Simpson?
I would not mind if Kissel was talking to Jessica Simpson.
Yes, that is. I would like to speak with Jessica Simpson. My mind wouldn't mind speaking with the other mind of Jessica Simpson.
Perfect. And lastly, spot some owned sex.
I was good in bed like 2 months ago one time because I was the perfect ratio of drunk and stoned.
I ben, spotted it.
Spot some owned sex.
I was good.
There was.
I've been good. I've been spot. Good in the past.
Maybe.
I've been
good. I know. Marriage.
Hey!
Wow.
That's actually. I think that's the answer. Every wedding I've ever been to owned sex.
Now people pay anywhere from hundreds to thousands of dollars an hour to be asked these questions and have their reactions interpreted. This still happens today. Those fucking questions are being asked right now in a Scientology center somewhere on this earth.
All right, let me just Venmo you. What do I owe you, Marcus?
I believe for this session,
$1,500 for those three questions. Yeah.
No. Spot some own sex.
It's truly
is
disgusting.
That not like, is that like human trafficking in Malaysia, like from St. Louis?
I don't even want to decipher what that nonsense is.
And of course, all of the answers that you give in these auditing sessions are meticulously documented and saved.
Ooh, so now we know Henry is addicted to alcohol, smoking marijuana, and is bad in bed unless he has the perfect dose of both.
No, I'm good when I'm connected. You got to look in the eyes. Never leave the eye gaze.
God.
And suddenly, just being clear wasn't good enough. And in 1952, the creation of Scientology proper introduced another level, that of the OT.
But I just
it's like vanilla Coke.
Yeah, it just stinks because someone worked so hard to, like, they thought they were going to win the game, and then they're like, it's time for more.
Well, you got wins, but you don't have enough gains yet.
Oh, I see.
And they take it back, right? Every single time they do this, and they're talking about, it's like when David Miscavige shows up, later on, we're going to find out that becomes the new game. Everything gets rewritten all the time. And then you got to pay for it all over again and get cleared again.
Yeah,
that is the game he sets up right here.
Yeah, and Miscavige has introduced new games throughout the years. I think even as late as like 2005, like he keeps introducing new tech. And that's what they call all of this stuff is when you hear a Scientologist talking about the tech, the technology, they're talking about all of these auditing techniques. They're talking about all of the things that they do in order to reach the level of OT, operating Thetan. See, Dianetics only had to do with the body. Scientology has to do with the soul, of which Hubbard, quote,
had come across incontrovertible, scientifically validated evidence of the existence of. And you cannot argue with me with that because I just wrote that down.
There's no way to argue with that whatsoever.
Can't do it. I wrote it.
You wrote it down. You wrote it on a page, and you're overweight, so there's no way
that's
wrong.
And then I printed my own certificate for myself to show me that I had done that.
Okay.
And I put that up on a wall in a frame I made myself from several pieces of wood. I made the frame and the certificate, and you can't take that away from me unless you take that from my hands, but then I can come and take it from your hands back, and it's like I did it again.
Mr. Hubbard, there's a line forming at the coffee shop. Please, go.
I have scientific, absolute, incontrovertible evidence that I have already paid for this coffee.
Yes, you did
nothing.
Actually. You know what? I don't even care if you paid for it. Do you want a pastry?
Yes.
Go.
Besides this scientifically validated evidence, Hubbard had also come across a nasty little legal battle with backer Don Purcell, whom Hubbard regularly referred to as, quote,
that little flatulence.
I kind of think that's funny. I have to admit, Elrond, I would laugh if I was hanging out with him. I would be, that's good.
So it reminds me of the Ren and Stimpy episode when Stimpy had the fart.
Remember when Stimpy lost his fart? That was sad. So Parsons and Purcell, every friend that goes into business with him, just once again, they get totally screwed over.
Always.
Yeah.
Always.
And he still has children, by the way. He's been a deadbeat father, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So it seems that since Purcell was responsible for past debts, it was also possible that if Purcell took care of those debts from Elizabeth, New Jersey, he would also end up with the rights to Dianetics. So Scientology was, at this point, essentially Hubbard's backup plan, just in case the Dianetics gravy train was lost. So Hubbard had to come up with something completely new, and he did so with typical sci-fi flair.
He literally just did it. He literally just knew that it was all money. He knew that Dianetics was going to get taken out from underneath him, and he wanted also to make sure that Dianetics was worth nothing.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to make sure that not only that if he was not going to make money off of it, nobody else was. And so now it's like, well, Dianetics was just kind of the stepping stones. We don't need that anymore. Now we have this fucking, this is the break-off shuttle part.
Mm-hmm. It's like Evil Dead versus Evil Dead 2. You really don't need Evil Dead.
Interesting.
Evil Dead 2 is a superior movie. I mean, I love Evil Dead, but it is
Evil
a superior
Dead 2 is
movie.
Far superior.
And it's the same plot.
Exactly, same movie.
Oh.
Yeah. Same movie, but with a budget.
Then, so you mean to tell me I've been putting fucking useless dollars into Sam Raimi's fucking pocket for Evil Dead 1?
Yeah, just watch Evil Dead 2, bro.
I'm going to find him in Hollywood. I'm going to pants him.
No.
Push him out the street in front of his family.
I love Sam Raimi. God, he's perfect.
Now, here's the cosmology of Scientology. In Scientology, the true self of a person is an immortal, omniscient, omnipotent being called a Thetan.
Ooh.
Thetans had created the universe to amuse themselves, but in the process had lost their superpowers of being immortal, omniscient, and omnipotent.
It's like being in the bath and you put a bunch of subs on top of your penis. Like when you're like sitting there and you're like, oh, he's got a hat. No, he's got a beard.
Yeah.
And then you forget to jerk off.
Sure. And you realize your bath water is just filthy and you're not getting clean.
Covered in red.
Now, over trillions of years, Thetans had picked and discarded millions of bodies. Going in one, going out one. Going in one, going out one. But every person was always inhabited by a Thetan. You've got a Thetan.
I got one?
I got a Thetan.
Ooh.
Henry's got a Thetan.
Ooh.
Mine is fun and sweet.
Yes.
And gay as a lark. And just all he wants to do is dance and be in movies.
Mine's name is Blorb Reynolds. and he can smoke and smoke and smoke, but he doesn't get cancer. Kind of cool.
But all the sounds like both your Thetans have problems.
You need to get cancer.
Now, with the help of Scientology, one could restore their thetan superpowers and become an operating thetan, a.k.a. an OT.
Oh. Now, this is kind of sort of like, you're like, if that's the Krang inside of the big robot body, and then it can take over and do cool shit for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you become an OT, you could actually transcend Jesus Christ and Buddha, who were, in Hubbard's words,
just a shade above clear. Not that far. I mean, they certainly wore a lot less clothes than I do.
Sir, I gave you your croissant. What else do you want? Can you get out of this coffee shop?
For this meal. I have scientific proof that I've paid for this meal.
I'm not even charging you. Just
scientific proof.
And from the moment of its release, people ate this shit up.
This is Tom Cruise was talking about being an OT. So he has a thetan?
Well,
that has a superpower.
I think he's an OT7. It goes up to OT8.
Yeah, okay. OT, because that's the thing, is that first because originally with Dianetics, it was just becoming clear. That was the furthest that you would go. And then when Scientology was introduced, then you wanted to become an OT. But once you become an OT, there are 8 more levels to go. OT1, OT2, OT3, OT4, OT5, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
And every single level above OT, you start getting more and more information. That's where all the wacky shit like Xenu comes in. That I'm sure all of our listeners, you know about Xenu and the volcanoes and all that.
But that's called that is also a part of what Scientology does, is a thing called study tech, which idea you learn at the very beginning. They brainwash you into how you're supposed to learn Scientology. This happens later on. It got birthed at their new British home, but it was this idea of there are gradients and MUs, right? Misunderstood words. These are the only two things that are keeping you from getting Scientology. So if you end up in the higher OT levels and you hear the Xenu shit and you're like, oh, I'm not into this at all, it's because you did not properly follow study tech, and you do not gradients are like slowly learning bit by bit over time. So he builds this in to slowly roll you up to ludicrous bullshit that then you're forced to recognize because you're $125,000 deep into the program.
Exactly. And you would have to admit that you're wrong. You have to admit that you led your family astray.
It's highly embarrassing.
Highly embarrassing indeed.
Yeah. So
again, it's like you've been on a Herald team for 5 years and you didn't get a Saturday Night Live audition. You don't know why.
I heard they were auditioning your specific type this year too.
Now, the Thetan theory was perfect for a sci-fi writer, as Hubbard was given essentially limitless scenarios to play around with, and his followers responded by giving him scenarios that were just as fantastic. One preclear, completely on his own, said that he had arrived on a planet 74,000 years ago and had battled, quote, black magic operators who were using electronics for nefarious purposes.
I think he was just yelling at a black operator for Sprint. And he's just like, I'm gonna spin this. This is a different planet.
This is what Hubbard said further about that story.
He now goes to another planet by spaceship. A deception is accomplished by hypnosis and pleasure implants, rather like opium and their effects, whereby he is deceived into a love affair with a robot decked out as a beautiful red-haired girl. And that's how I like them. If I were to have every robot in the world, I'd put a red wig on all of them. You should see my toaster. Singed hair all over it, but I'll fuck it anyway.
So in other words, with the help of Scientology, a person could write themselves into a sci-fi story and completely and totally believe that they had actually lived the life of a space hero in a distant galaxy.
Okay.
It's a perfect nerd religion.
This is, as referenced by Henry Zebrowski at our Chaos Magic panel in the Salt Lake City Comic Con, this is John Candy in the movie Delirious. Yes. He wrote himself into the script and found love, which is, by the way, sexually predatory.
It's a great idea, though.
It's a great idea. But you can't
That's how you made it work.
But he brainwashed a woman technically, wrote all the words for her, and then she fell in love with a huge, huge man.
Yes. How do you think it works? How do you think I dated my redhead? You build a fantasy.
Is that what you're calling your girlfriend now? My redhead? You're like Billy Crystal in My Giant. This is my redhead. Is that how you introduce her on the red carpet?
Yes.
See, Hubbard.
I lied to her. That's how she believed. That's how she stayed.
That's basically what you just said.
So Hubbard followed up the rollout of Scientology with The History of Man, which he introduced as, quote,
a cold-blooded and factual account of your last 60 trillion years. You're welcome.
In this, he introduced the genetic entity, a.k.a. GE, which was a low-grade soul that occupied your body alongside a thetan. This gave Hubbard yet another thing to get rid of, as the lower being GE was chock full of Ingrams, and most people's GE Ingrams had to do with clams.
Hear him out.
What? Hold on a second. Okay, hear so him we got out. We got SPs, OGs, GEs. They just sound like car companies.
Dude, I mean, it's LRH. It's you know, it's all of these acronyms. What these acronyms do is they just isolate you from the rest of humanity. They make you a Scientologist in language. Because, I mean, of course, like, language is such an important thing to control for a cult leader.
Of course.
And Scientology was one of the first to really understand that, is that if you give someone their own language, then pretty soon they're not going to be able to talk to anybody but a Scientologist.
Yes.
Well, you're basically implant in them a whole new personality. You implant. That's what Jason Begay, who was one of the big actors that had come out against Scientology, that's what he was saying. That's why this is great for actors. That's why actors love it, because essentially it's like a role. You're playing a role, and then also you're getting a whole new system of a way of thinking that basically is an us versus them mentality anyway, that everybody else is an SP or a WOG, and you are someone that truly understands how the universe works. So you get a sense of superiority. You get your own fun little language. It's great for nerds.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now about the clams.
Now this has got to. This is
about the
big
clams.
Jump.
You know what, Marcus? We've been meaning to talk to you about the clams. As a matter of fact,
listen, I love clams. Don't get me wrong. I love a chowder. I love a linguine. But this is he postulates, to use that word, that we all started as clams.
Mm-hmm. That all, and he also postulates that is proof of evolution, that everyone has a clam GE inside of them.
I got a clam in me?
You got a clam in you.
I got a clam in
me. You got to get that clam out.
I got
big ass clam.
Well, how the hell do I get the clam out of me?
Well, okay, well, I'll tell you.
Please, God. I found out I got a thetan inside of me, and there's a clam. I guess he's eating it? Is he having like a little Italian dinner inside of me?
If you were a clam, you'd be like a gooey duck. Have you ever seen those clams? They're big, long.
Oh, those are disgusting. You eat the worst food I've ever seen in my life.
Anything that that struggles to live, I eat.
Good Lord.
Okay, so the biggest bugaboo that a clam has to deal with is the constant conflict between the hinge that wants to open and the one that wants to close. This could be fixed by imagining a clam on the beach opening and closing its shell rapidly, while at the same time mimicking the opening and closing of the shell with your thumb and forefinger. Open, close, open, close, open, close. Mm-hmm. Hubbard said, quote,
this gesture would upset large numbers of people.
I understand why. Because then you ask them, like, why are you doing that with your hand? Be like, it's like a clam at the beach.
I'm making a clam. It's clam hands. I'm making clam hands.
Yeah, I firmly, I'm sticking with my idea that this man just belongs in the corner of a dark Wisconsin bar, just slamming curds and getting trash, being like, yeah, look at my hand. I call it clam. It's kind of fun.
Well, you're wait. Literally online for the public pool, just running around going, clam hands.
Clam hands.
Clam hands.
Clam hands.
Well, wait, do you hear about the weeper and the boohoo?
Yes.
The weeper and the weeper, also known as the boohoo, so named because these creatures pumped seawater out of their shells as they breathed. This was the source of pre-clears who were unable to cry, and also the source of a fear of falling, as boohoos were often dropped by predatory birds.
So
what are we even doing here?
Is that
like, what are you even talking about? It's like, even in that first meeting, I'd be like, weepies and boohoos? What are we doing? Why are we doing this?
They sound like salty candies. So, well, I mean, that's not the sound you make when you're falling.
It sounds like Willy Wonka things.
Here's a weepie. Here's a boohoo. Why are my pants down, Willy?
Well, the thing is that all this stuff, like, Scientology has been insane and indecipherable from the moment of its inception. All this stuff is totally, this isn't something that they spring on you. This is something that you read in preparation to become a Scientologist, but that's so, all a part of the allure.
How much money would I have to spend before I hear about the weepy and the boohoos?
I think you're about $15,000 in at this point.
You know what? I'm beginning to think there's something to these weepies and boohoos. I'm about 15K in debt that tells me that's right.
See, you have any idea how many pounds of clams are worth $15,000? That's how I come to me, like, how many pounds of clams I could buy for just $15,000? I'd just rather do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Have the clams.
Yeah.
See, all this is a part of the allure of Scientology. If someone was already into Dianetics and it gained them positive effects, then of course they wanted to know more. So they'd buy Hubbard's next book and the next and the next. All of these books, these weepies and boohoos, all this shit is available publicly. They're selling these in bookstores. But right. Each one was harder to understand than the one before. So in order to understand them, you had to have someone teach you how to understand it. And in order to have someone teach you how to understand it, you had to pay more and more and more money.
And you need an institution for them to teach you in.
Exactly.
Honestly, do you think that
you do really believe, if you really believe, if you read any one of these books and you truly believe you understand it, you're lying to yourself.
You have to be lying to yourself. Do you think that L. Ron, did he understand the con?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So this is, and so he must have been openly like laughing at these individuals.
He was.
Yes. They would talk about it. When he moved into an apartment before the big move into the gigantic British Scientology Center, like the first one, he was just living with a bunch of people, and he would come out, and they said that he was like this really fun guy. He was like a friend of a friend of like some various like section of Scientology, and he'd come and he'd play the ukulele and joke, and he'd make these dirty songs making fun of auditing. Like he would make fun of auditing and make fun of Scientology and do all of this shit. He knew exactly what he was doing. He thought it was funny, and they would laugh. They would just laugh all night, and then he wouldn't pay them rent, and then he just disappeared.
Yeah, I would grab that ukulele out of his hands so fast and just smash it over everything. Oh, gotta be so fun.
Yeah, there was even one story that a guy told that he was hanging out with L. Ron Hubbard, and some guy showed up at their doorstep and offered to pay Hubbard $5,000 for a copy of Excalibur. Remember, Excalibur was the book that was supposedly so good that it made people kill themselves.
Right.
And Hubbard told the guy very solemnly, no, of course, like it's, you know, it is not for man's eyes. I cannot sell it for any amount of money. And then Hubbard closed the door and started laughing and looked at his friend and said, you know, man, someday I got to get around to writing that bullshit.
Wow. Very smart. Never open the box. If Joseph McCarthy taught us one thing, never show the briefcase. It's just full of vodka and porno. And that's all. I think that the whole mind of L. Ron Hubbard was tits and whiskey.
Yes.
Now, as far as, like, Henry, as far as you said, like, the people who tricked themselves into thinking they understood it completely, that would be the nerds, the eggheads. They brushed off all of the weird thetan and boohoo shit as allegory, because he had people there that had, like, master's degrees in biology. You know, he had people that were extremely intelligent, book smart, but were still going along with all
this
shit.
It's literally how people read Trump's tweets. But what did he really mean? No, he really meant that about... Colin Kaepernick. He really meant that.
Yeah, he's just saying it. Yeah, and there was no way that someone, these smart people, there's no way, as intelligent as they were, that they could ever be taken in by such nonsense. It can't be that this person is just spouting this bullshit. There has to be some deeper meaning. In Trump's case, he has to be playing 4D chess.
Oh my God.
Some bullshit like that.
I interviewed a friend of mine who was a conservative, and he literally said he's playing 3D chess.
No, 4D chess.
No, he said 3D chess.
He said, well, he's getting it wrong because it's 4D chess.
Oh, it's 4D. I didn't realize it's 4D chess. I should have corrected him and be like, no, actually, he's so smart. He's 4D chess.
And these people.
The man couldn't identify chess pieces if he wanted to. He'd be like, what are these shitty little statues?
Yeah. Like, you just now, which one do I stick up Melania? No, leave it alone.
Yeah, and so these people, they went further and further and further. They got in deeper and deeper and deeper because no one wants to admit that they've been played for a fool. No one wants to admit that they were wrong. No one wants to admit that this thing that they went all in on is actually complete and total horseshit. It's embarrassing.
It's like whenever I go to watch the Knicks play at Madison Square Garden, they're down by 50, and I'm like, they got a shot.
They got it.
They got it. They can still pull this off.
Everybody plays fool sometimes. That's what happens, bro. And it's written in a song for a reason. It's like only fools rush in. That's another fucking tight lyric that actually does happen.
We used to say everyone plays with food.
Everybody plays with food when ain't hungry.
Yeah, that was fun.
So within a couple of years, Scientology had started to organically grow small pods all over the world, particularly in England. In 1953, Hubbard took control of a group that had spontaneously appeared in the UK and dubbed it the Hubbard Association of Scientologists International, a.k.a. HASI.
He does do a good job with naming his buildings.
He's great at it. Yeah, he's awesome. Now, meanwhile, back in the U.S., Dom Purcell, after enduring legal attack after a legal attack, as well as some mild gang stalking, had given up his fight for Dianetics. And so, with both that and Scientology firmly in his control, Hubbard incorporated the Church of Scientology in California on February 1st, 1954.
Was this church tax exempt?
They did not yet. They did not get tax exempt status until the mid to late 90s.
And do they still have tax exemption?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, of course they do. Yes.
Brilliant. That's why they good job, still government.
Yeah, that's why they still exist. And the story of how they got tax exemption, that's very well covered in Going Clear.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Going Clear, go and it's just great. I mean, it is pretty much Scientology.
They personally harassed IRS agents.
Scientology won tax exemption how the Russians won World War II. Just keep throwing bodies at them. Just keep throwing bodies, and eventually they will surrender. Mm. Now,
when he showed up in England, they were incredibly weary of this man showing up with this weird cult and this church and all shit. But he showed up as a botanist. And he said when he appeared in England that he was there doing these experiments proving that plants can feel feelings. And that's why they let him in, and they were like, they covered him as this famous botanist because he said he was a former nuclear engineer turned botanist.
Yeah. You could just say things back then and people believed you.
Yeah, you can do it now.
No, you they can Google search you.
It doesn't matter. We're living in a post-truth world, bro.
Well, not like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're not living in a post-resume world. Not yet.
It's harder than ever to lie in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So this whole move of incorporating Scientology as a church, it was the perfect move for Hubbard. First of all, being a church, Scientology could take advantage of all the constitutional rights that a religion was owed. Second, religion was big business in post-war America. If you didn't know, under God wasn't added to the Pledge of Allegiance until 1954, and it wasn't until 1956 that In God We Trust was made our country's official motto. The 50s were truly the beginning of the religious clusterfuck that the United States is today. This is the rise of Billy Graham. This is the rise of the religious right, the evangelicals. All this shit started in the 50s, and L. Ron Hubbard was smart enough to grab a couple of those people that were looking for some meaning in the empty hollow shell that was 1950s and America.
Other than Vietnam, which was huge, but oftentimes when societies have peace and money for the first time, and it's still very new, that's when religions spring up, when there's time to have them.
Yeah.
I mean, other
also,
than Nam, which was obviously
began the
atrocious.
Rollout of anti-communist thought, right? And the communists at the time were viewed to be like an atheistic society.
Yeah.
So a part of this is psychological warfare happening inside of America to get to start being like, we're on God's side, they're not on God's side. And it allows everybody to join in on the fight against communism. And then also leads to the McCarthy era bullshit, where then it's okay to rat a bunch of people out because they're not with fucking God, and that they deserve to be destroyed, which is very similar to Scientology wanting to destroy anyone that is an SP.
And it plays into limited government and those things. I follow God's law, not man's law, and such things.
Exactly. Now, furthermore, being a church bolstered Hubbard's persecution complex. His enemies were no longer attacking an idea, they were now attacking a faith, which made his counterattacks even more justifiable.
And it also strengthens him. Because now it's like, I'm obviously onto something. Everybody that's ever been onto something has been attacked by the government. Jesus, all these people have all been. So now look at it. All of this shit I talked about, they're afraid that we're too close to the truth. And then we will not be governable enough because I'm going to make all y'all OTs. And then we won't be able to listen to everybody because the government will be suppressive people.
But didn't the government at some point be like, this is a church, I want to start it? Didn't it be like, what's with these woohoos and boohoos? Can you tell me about those?
The only woohoos and boohoos I'll allow are the crying that my family does when I leave on my many business trips, quote unquote.
As far as the attacking went, if Scientology was threatened in any way, Hubbard believed that the only way to defend was to attack. He wrote,
"If you ever forget that, you will lose every battle that you are engaged in. Make it rough. Rough on attackers all the way."
As we see time and time and time again.
Yeah.
And then that is the first seed for keeping Scientology working, which we'll go into next episode, which is one of the most sinister tenets of Scientology that makes them so aggressive and a rough group. And to go against.
You know, Tom Cruise jumping on a couch, it's funny, it's cute. That man destroys lives. Mm-hmm. And he tried to do that to Katie Holmes, but we love Katie Holmes.
Absolutely. And, you know, and the reason why Katie Holmes got Suri out of there, we'll get into here in just a few minutes. Now, by 1956, Hubbard, in an impressively manic sprint, had written more than 60 books on Scientology and was releasing a new one almost every 2 months, wow. Each time introducing new processes and procedures that people had to pay to learn, many times requesting that they had to redo previous courses. It's like, okay, you already paid for this course. Well, actually, I discovered this new thing in my auditing in my research. He always says, my research. I discovered something in my research
right. That
says that, no, wait, what I said before, that actually wasn't right. This is right. Now you have to go back and redo everything else and also pay for it all over again.
So you made a mistake in your lecture, and now I have to go back and redo it.
Well, it's not a mistake. I didn't make a mistake.
It's because you made a mistake.
No, it's not a mistake. No. I did further research.
But what? So what did I learn the first time, Al?
Nothing. You learned nothing.
I learned nothing. Okay. Well, you make a good point.
Yeah, and all those courses that people had to take over and over again, Hubbard got a piece of it all.
Jeez.
But despite making well over six figures a year in 1950s money, Hubbard still managed to stiff people for rent and bills at every turn, leeching off of his followers. And so, it came as quite a surprise when he let his current landlords know that he had bought the Maharaja of Jaipur's estate in Sussex, England, aka St. Hill Manor, which would serve as the de facto headquarters of Scientology for the next few years.
Now, I would say that this is really the only period of time where L. Ron Hubbard himself was happy.
Yeah.
Because Scientology was small. He could completely maintain it. It was in that little manor. People were coming to him, treating him like a god. He was living in these lavish estates with many workers coming out there. It was as isolated as he always wanted Scientology to be. Mm-hmm.
So how many people are we talking at this point? Are we in 10,000, 20,000, 30,000?
Couple, honestly, it's like maybe 2,000 or 3,000. Because you only had three other centers. So you had California, Wichita, which now is gone. Jersey, which is pretty much gone too. So it's like, and then so everyone's coming here.
Well,
and
he'd already said he'd had some in Arizona. He had some in California. There are some. They're dotted all over the landscape.
Okay,
but as he was getting all that set up, bad news came from across the Atlantic. In 1952, a few years earlier, Hubbard's estranged son from his first marriage, Nibs, had shown back up in Hubbard's life wanting to be a part of this whole new Scientology thing. And within just a few short years, Nibs had gained the titles of Hubbard Communications Officer in Charge, Chief Advanced Clinical Course Instructor, and Hubbard Communications Office Worldwide Technical Director. See, it came out that Nibs had quote-unquote blown, which was Scientology jargon for leaving the church, a.k.a. blowing the org.
My goodness, it sounds like an interesting sci-fi film where there's women and they're not wearing shirts and then the guys are all, you know, looking fun.
It sounds like, yeah, like Dune.
Yeah, but blowing the orb.
Org. It's like the org, the organization.
Oh, the org, yeah. Blowing the org, yeah.
See, it seems like Nibs hadn't gotten any of the financial gain that he figured was coming his way from being the Messiah's son and decided it was time to cut his losses and resign all those positions. See, Hubbard's main concern was not that he was losing his son, but rather that Nibs would try to continue making money using Scientology, which he said he still wanted to practice in his spare time. In response, Hubbard wrote,
"If he goes to practice anywhere or starts up a squirrel activity, have HCO cancel all certificates and awards of his. He won't ever be hired back."
And that gives you even more jargon that they're throwing in there. Squirrels.
Right.
Is another big thing. What are squirrels again?
Squirrels are if someone leaves with Scientology teachings and decides to teach it outside of the Scientology system. Like if people like certain parts of Scientology, which has happened, they go out and they teach them and they are called squirrels.
Right. And then they have the institution that the folks, the squirrel busters, yeah. who sound very yes. fun, but they're yeah. not actually arresting squirrels for selling narcotics. They're stalking people.
Yes, and also the idea is that, like, certificates are, he hands you a clear certificate. If he feels that you've cleared a certain course, you get certificates. And the way he punishes people is by saying, I can rescind them anytime I want, and therefore your soul's in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. Now, this, among other things, caused Hubbard's paranoia to increase, and so he introduced security checking, a.k.a. the sec check, for all the people that worked for him. A sec check was essentially an interrogation that used an e-meter. And the worst sec checks asked a person dozens of extremely personal and embarrassing questions to not only try to ascertain whether they were a threat to Scientology, but also to obtain incriminating information about the person undergoing it.
Right.
Here's an example of some of the questions. I'm going to audit you guys again.
Okay, cool.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I feel like I got this one. In no
I don't
way,
know. I don't know if I have this one.
Ooh, I'm like, I'm going to be a Sea Org before you know it.
Do you collect sexual objects?
No!
I don't know. I don't know. You have the fleshlight. I know you have the fleshlight, Marcus.
He's asking MJP, the question.
I'm not being audited here.
I'm auditing you. You have sexual
objects. He flipped the table. Can you flip the tables on the auditor?
Yeah, HTZ, absolutely not. HTZ cannot flip the tables on the auditor. Neither can you, BGK.
No! That's my answer.
Next. Have you ever done anything your mother would be ashamed to find out?
I once was at work, and I had a big thing of Indian food, and I was really hungover, and I shat my pants in the cubicle, and then I just threw my underwear out in the bathroom of the office, and I sat with shit-stained khakis on for the rest of the day because I only had 3 hours left.
Well, my mother would be proud of you for staying at work, so that's not so bad.
Have you ever peddled dope?
No, I can actually say I have never peddled any kind of dope. That's good. Yeah. And my mother would be proud of you for that.
I've given weed, but I've never sold weed.
Yeah.
Do you have any bastards?
No.
Just my friends.
Yeah. Unlike L. Ron Hubbard, I don't have any bastards.
Are you upset about this security check?
Absolutely. Yes.
And no, Kizzle, that's not your answer. You answer, go, no.
No.
And then they get even weirder from there. Here's some more. Have you ever tried to act normal?
Every day of my life outside of this show and my home.
Yeah.
Have you ever practiced cannibalism?
No, damn. Unfortunately, because it's very difficult to get human meat. You cannot do it. It's illegal.
Have you ever had intercourse with a member of your family?
No!
What? Why are you asking me that? I feel like you've had intercourse with a member of your family. BGK, MJP, I'm flipping it. You had sex with your brother.
I'm not audited here. I'm not the one being audited.
The way you formally answered that question, Marcus.
Strange.
Have you ever had anything to do with a baby farm?
Okay, let me clarify. Is this the beginning farm, or is this a farm of babies?
That's a good clarification, because, yeah, I thought it was a farm worked by babies.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That's a third option.
I don't know, but in which case, no, I've never been to a farm where the farmers are indeed babies.
I've never seen a bunch of stalks of babies growing on stalks.
No.
You know what I mean?
What question in this check shouldn't I ask you again?
The baby farm one.
Yeah.
Because I'm having even problems understanding what the baby farm is.
I don't even know. Yeah, that's kind of the problem with that one. Maybe what would your mother not like about you or disapprove of you?
Are you upset about this security check?
I'm actually fine with it
now. Oh?
Yeah.
No.
Well, now I'm just thinking about a bunch of babies with tractors and, you know, stuff like that.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of cute.
Yeah. Little baby tools.
And then it can get flipped around.
Oh.
Say, if the auditor is the one going through the sec check, then I would be asked these questions. Henry, ask these questions.
Have you ever startled a pre-clear when he was on a comm lag?
No.
I think you have.
Yeah, it seems like you have, the way that you answered that one.
No.
Have you ever failed to flatten a process when it was still biting?
No.
I think he did.
I don't believe you. Have you ever jammed a pre-clear into a one-way flow and then left him stuck there in it?
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that just
you need to be jerked off until you're ready to think again.
Is that giving someone a swirly? What is that?
Yes. No, I can actually explain all these. Are you upset by the security check?
No.
Good. That's the only one I believe. No, so pretty clear when he was in Comlag, Aristotle Pleaker was in a Comlag, which means that when you're asking questions back and forth in a TR session, when you're doing weird clearing questions, you don't answer him back. If you ever failed to flatten a process when it was still binding, it means you did not continue the auditing until you made the needle float. And if you ever jammed the pre-clear into a one-way flow and then left them stuck there, that's when you do stuff being like, are you a dog? No. Say it again. Are you a dog? No. Like, you have to, like, and then you leave them there. You don't finish the auditing sequence.
Sounds like if you put a fat kid in a sewage drain or something. That doesn't
seem right. Have I made any of this clear?
No.
See, and Hubbard's paranoia was so deep that he even created sec checks for children aged 6 to 12. And this is why some people say why Katie Holmes left Scientology, because at around age 6, that's when kids start getting introduced to this. And she's like, oh, my daughter's not going to go through all that bullshit.
Definitely not.
Here's some of the examples. What has somebody told you not to tell?
My mother is Daddy Katie Holmes. I can do whatever the hell I want.
Do you have a
secret? Daddy has weed.
Do you have a secret? Who have you made guilty? Have you ever been a coward? Have you ever decided, someday when I'm grown up, I'll get even? If so, with whom? Well, are you upset by this security check?
Well, I am 6 years old. What do you mean, have I ever been a coward? I haven't had enough time to be a coward. Why are you asking me this, elderly man with gray hair?
Someday when I'm grown up, I'll get even is like the basis for my entire career.
That is the basis for all of our lives.
Yeah, that's why we're here right now. Now, the sec check questions even extended to L. Ron Hubbard's wife, Mary Sue, who was by then playing an extensive role in the organization while also becoming one of the most hated people in the organization. People could not stand Mary Sue Hubbard.
I believe
she was a stickler.
Yeah, she was. And it wasn't so much of a surprise that one of the questions on the sec check was, have you ever had unkind thoughts about Mary Sue?
Oh. Well, what do you mean by unkind? What do you mean? I mean, it's not like I haven't completely pictured, like, checking her with my car every once in a while. It's kind of like the satisfaction I'd get of seeing her roll over the hood and smash into the fucking windshield. I don't think about that, like, all the time.
I mean, why would these people answer that question honestly? Because, of course, they wanted to kill Mary Sue.
Because what it did was, because the e-meter did react when you thought thoughts, right? It did have, like, a little bounce. It makes you to the point, it's thought policing. It's to the point where you can't even think anything outside of it because you won't even dare, because you don't want to. It's not even because you feel scared of L. Ron Hubbard or Mary Sue. It's because you're sick of the sec check questions and you're sick of constantly having to deal with it. So you're just like, I'm just not even going to think about it anymore so that I can just pass this shit so I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, and they talked about that in that My Scientology movie. By the way, Louis Theroux, I understand he's British. Apparently I said he was French. Whatever. He's British. They're the same people.
Yeah, Helena Montana, fuck you.
Oh, why would you say that? Why would you say that?
Let us make it family. Let us make it fancy.
Good
Lord. We're making it fancy.
But they were talking about the guy that was giving the exam, or the guy behind the guy giving the exam, the one of the big strong guys, just started punching the guy in the face. It was just like, just answer appropriately and you can leave, you know? And that's all it was.
Yeah. And every single one of these sec check sheets.
Oh my God.
Were sent to the Scientology headquarters in St. Hill, where they were carefully and meticulously compiled into dossiers on each and every high-level church member. And it wasn't just those simple questions like that. I mean, it was questions like, have you ever murdered anyone?
Right.
Some of these people have murdered someone, and they would, so they could get through it, they would eventually say, yes, I have murdered someone.
It's like an open mic comedian just searching for the joke. There was a comedian recently who admitted to a massive crime and was arrested. not a smart move.
So, I think more comedians that we probably know are guilty of crimes.
Yes, I'm sure. Yes.
So in 1960, Hubbard's paranoia would come into conflict with another one of the 20th century's great paranoiacs, Richard Nixon.
Ooh.
Hubbard issued a bulletin to the U.S. that said that they should do everything in their power to stop the presidency of Nixon. He said,
we want clean hands in public office in the United States. Let's begin by doggedly denying Nixon the presidency, no matter what his Secret Service tries to do to us now. So please get busy on it.
Also, I think George McGovern has some good ideas.
Can you imagine the threesome a woman would have to endure between Richard Nixon and L. Ron Hubbard?
I don't want to imagine that.
Taking your clothes off.
I don't want to. As a matter of fact, we'll speak of McGovern. Thomas Eagleton could have used some Scientology, perhaps.
This is 1960. This is Kennedy Nixon.
Okay. This is the Kennedy time. Never mind.
Oh, God. If someone could please draw a threesome between Richard Nixon, L. Ron Hubbard, and Mary Sue Whip.
Or just don't. Yeah. If you please don't do that as well.
I'm going to come.
Sounds like he's about to have one.
Oh, I'm having one. Oh.
Are you Richard Milhouse Nixon?
Call me Milhouse.
No, Nixon lost in 1960, of course, but it probably didn't have much to do with Hubbard's bulletin. Nevertheless, it helped to further pad Hubbard's FBI file, which had grown considerably larger since the nutball had founded an official religion. He was already on their radar because he was constantly telling everybody that his organization was full of communists that needed to be rooted out. And then when he started the official religion, the FBI was like, oh, now we really got to keep an eye on this guy. But he wasn't completely antagonistic towards the U.S. Once Kennedy was in office, Hubbard offered the services of Scientology to help train and condition astronauts for the low, low cost of $25 an hour for 250 hours with the possibility of a group discount, cash only.
Nice.
Wow, that's a good move.
That is a good move.
That's a Men's Warehouse move. That's a liquidation move.
Yeah, that's a steal at any price.
Hubbard was so confident that Kennedy would say yes that he took a trip to the Washington Scientology Center to discuss with his staff how they were going to handle the coming flood of astronauts.
Interesting, but I guess instead of buying it, they just raided the offices?
Yeah, instead of sending astronauts, they sent the FDA to raid the Washington Scientology offices because the FDA had caught wind of this e-meter bullshit and were investigating them for false promises on products.
Food and Drug Administration.
Strange
astronauts.
Bad move on the part of the government, as it resulted in no charges and did nothing more than to bolster Hubbard and Scientology even further as a government group, because now they can point specifically to government persecution. They can say they raided our offices, they know we're onto something, they know that they are evil and we are good, so therefore give us more money because we need to fight the FDA now.
It just shows you just gotta never give in to trolls. You can never give in to these people because they use it. They flip it and they use that negative energy for themselves.
But despite this, Hubbard, on his 52nd birthday, issued a general amnesty to his followers, saying,
any and all offenses of any kind before this date, discovered or undiscovered, are fully and completely forgiven. Unless you've eaten the last slice of pizza, and that is a crime that can never go unpunished. They punished them by spankings.
Should have robbed that bank yesterday. I didn't realize today was the day that it all didn't matter.
Now, this coincided with Hubbard's sudden revelation that he had visited heaven. 43,892,832,611,177 years, 344 days, 10 hours, 20 minutes, and 40 seconds before 10:02 p.m. daylight Greenwich Mean Time on May 9th, 1963.
That is very exact, so you know it's real.
It's got to be real. Elrond, what was Jesus, was he black or white or tall or short or...
He was the blackest man I've ever seen, and I absolutely loved him. He was funny. He was smart. He could dance. He could do whatever. He was a funny, funny man. You know who was a piece of shit, though?
Who?
Fucking Beethoven.
Really?
Piece of shit. He was bad. I hated. I did not like him. Molière, gay as a skunk. A 1-1. Can't deal with him.
Really?
And but I tell you, and then Joan of Arc was shorter than I thought, and definitely Frencher.
Wow. Who knew? Got to be true.
See, Hubbard said that heaven was a high place in the mountains of a distant unnamed planet with beautiful marble columns. Hubbard said,
The entering grounds are very well kept, absolutely tremendously kept, fabulously fabulous entering grounds. They're laid out like Busch Gardens in Pasadena.
Ooh, that is nice.
But when Hubbard visited heaven again a trillion years later, 42,893,832,611,177 years ago, heaven had fallen on hard times.
Just 3 years later, huh?
1 year, one yeah. trillion years
one year,
later.
Oh, 1 trillion years.
I said 42,891,832,611,177 years ago.
I see.
The place is shabby. The vegetation gone, sad. Sad, yeah. Low energy. The pillars are scruffy. The saints have vanished. So have the angels. It's sad. A disgrace. Absolutely not fabulous, not tremendous.
What do you think happened, Elrond? Like bad government or...
Obamacare.
I'm surprised you know what that is. It's a couple decades.
I'm just saying words.
Well, years later, Scientologists, understandably a little embarrassed by this bullshit, would try to explain all this away once again as allegory. Hubbard did his best in the same bulletin to say otherwise about his heaven claims. He wrote,
"This HCO bulletin is based on over 1,000 years of research auditing. It is scientific research and is not in any way based upon the mere opinion of the researcher. And by that, I mean opposite of that. And by opposite of that, I mean opposite of that. I have scientific documentation to show that I did write the sentences that I have been writing and you are currently reading. I have scientific proof of that. It's the sentences that I'm writing."
It's an analogy, without a doubt.
Now, as the years went by, Hubbard's paranoia only increased. In 1965, Hubbard introduced ethics. Ethics was the first major step towards Scientology becoming a society unto itself with its own rules and methods of punishment.
This is the worst. This is the worst part of it. And now this is how we're going to see how Scientology comes completely about the extension of the personality of L. Ron Hubbard. It's about joining you to be a part of him, like your cells of a gigantic organism. And ethics are trying to keep people on the ball and completely loyal to him. And it's where Scientology will become the fucking menace that it is today.
Mm-hmm. So is it Sea Org, as in Sea Organization, or Sea Organism?
Organization.
Okay.
Yeah. And anyone within the group of Scientology who is thought to be disloyal, lazy, or breaking the rules of Scientology would be reported to an ethics officer and assigned a condition in proportion to the crimes committed. These conditions varied depending on the infraction. They could be as low as a condition of liability, mm-hmm. in which the offender was made to wear a dirty gray rag tied around his or her left arm.
Ooh, that's
they're also not allowed to wash themselves. And that was like a big thing with Elrond. We felt that was the ultimate punishment, is that you couldn't shower or bathe.
That makes sense.
But they could be as high as complete excommunication. That would result in a person being declared an SP, or suppressive person.
So now, if you're excommunicated, do you still get squirrel busted? Because they kicked you out. Theoretically, you wanted to stay. You didn't blow.
Well, they have been. I think in Going Clear, one of the guys who blew was squirrel busted.
Yes, he was squirrel busted. But if they kick you out, do they still haunt you?
I think, yeah.
Because but then let me back in then.
If they kick you out, well, you can get back in, but it costs a lot of money.
You
got to
redo all the books.
I think one person who got kicked out looked at the cost of getting back in, and it was something like $150,000 for all the courses.
It's called freeloader's debt.
Freeloader's debt.
It's a thing that you incur when you leave voluntarily. You basically have to come back and pay all the money, especially if you're part of Sea Org, which we'll find out later on, which we'll talk about, is that if you, because then you get training for free if you're in Sea Org, and if you ever leave it, you then have to pay for the money that you owe for the classes that you got to take for free.
It's like when you get kicked out of prison, or you leave prison, you still got to pay for the ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
Also, squirrel busted does sound like the porn that you would use from the, that King Arthur movie with the hot girl squirrel and the little boy squirrel up in the tree.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Sword in the Stone.
That's right. Sword in the Stone.
Yeah. If a person was declared an SP, they would be considered fair game by the church and could be sued and harassed as much as Scientology thought was necessary. People that are fair game, these are the people that are gang stalked. It's a terrible practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, they didn't. Did they have access to like television and things like that, or was this was this their main pastime? Stalking ex members.
This is their main pastime.
Yeah, this is their main thing. And in fact, today, like Scientology members are. It is very. If you are deep in Scientology, it is difficult to get permission to freely explore the internet. Because
oh, really?
Once the internet came, that's when everything started really falling apart for them as far as membership goes. Because then people could so easily, and now that they've got, everybody in America every Scientologist has the ability to debunk Scientology in their pocket at all times.
That's one of the most interesting thing about the internet. It has led to huge group organizations that would have previously not, they couldn't solidify themselves. Donald Trump, for example, mm-hmm. his constituency, but it also debunked so much old fake religion.
Mm-hmm. Now, these practices of gang stalking, of fair game, all that, they were not lost on the Australian government, who in October 1965 released a 173-page report about Scientology, saying, among other things,
Scientology is evil. Its technique's evil. It is the most largest organization of unqualified persons engaged in a practice of dangerous techniques which masquerade as mental therapy. Huh. That's my new Australian.
I like that. That is a new Australian.
Yeah, I've been working on one too. Yeah. Scientology is evil. Its technique's evil. It is the world's largest organization of unqualified persons engaged in the practice of dangerous techniques, which masquerade as mental therapy.
This is very good. I feel like I'm talking to two Australian friends. It's like I have new friends. This is so good. Henry and Marcus never come back. I want Australian Henry and Australian Marcus at all times.
See, the reason why the Australians were coming at him was because a few years earlier, Hubbard had declared that Australia was to become the world's first clear continent and had begun to lay the groundwork to have his organization spread the country over. But
now, we're going to learn that is going to be a ongoing thread with L. Ron Hubbard. He wants an entire country.
Yeah,
he wants to be completely in charge of a country where no one can tell him he's wrong. No one can check up on his lies. Everybody worships him, and it's a completely isolated community.
He's wanted to be a dictator from day one.
Sure.
That's all he's ever wanted. And in fact, in Australia, when they put out that report, they even pretty much named him as a dictator. They said the tactics that he uses are the tactics of a dictator.
I mean, he probably could have gotten a state. The Mormons got Utah. You know, he could have, like Montana, probably could have just gone back there and led the whole damn place.
But to Australia's great credit, the state of Victoria outlawed Scientology in December of 1965 and empowered the Attorney General to seize and destroy all Scientology documents and recordings. This caused a ripple effect all the way to England, as a few months later, a chairman for the National Association for Mental Health stood up in the House of Commons and asked the Minister of Health to begin an official inquiry into Scientology in Britain.
I gotta say, I disagree with the Australians.
I mean,
You gotta let people believe what they want to believe.
I was pretty conflicted
myself.
Scientology, but people
should be allowed to practice if they want
to. But that's what you're doing. You are falling into their trap that they are a religion instead of being a predatory cult.
You are
They're also a predatory cult.
They are a predatory cult. Yeah, that is true.
They are bad.
But you also, Harry Potter. I've seen some fans at Comic-Con look cult-like to me. We want to stop Harry Potter?
Close to $1,500 in Harry Potter land.
Yeah,
I will
exactly.
say it's pretty predatory.
Yeah, those wands, they're not magic. They're using Wi-Fi.
$65 for each
wand.
One of those wands.
These
you show
were
100 up with the
at
wand,
Comic-Con.
And then, of course, you have to have the wand because you see everybody else got the wand and they're waving it and shit and things are like, the animatronics are going and they're like, it's magic.
It's technology.
Now, Hubbard responded to these allegations in Britain by hiring private detectives to dig up dirt on all the officials coming at him, but the detectives turned right around and sold the stories to the press, creating even more bad publicity. And this is all in addition to the heat Hubbard was feeling back home in the U.S. from the FBI. The idea on how to escape persecution came to Hubbard slowly but surely. It started with one simple question to one of his higher-ups.
Do you realize that 75% of the Earth's surface is completely free from the control of any government? Have you read or seen the film The Little Mermaid?
We're going to the sea.
And that's where we will pick up next time on the conclusion of the saga of L. Ron Hubbard.
Commodore coming through.
Wow, the Sea Orgs.
Yeah, man, that Very love cool. boat is not fun. It is not as sexy as no. the real love boat.
Ooh, no. I'm sure it's not. All right, great. L. Ron Hubbard, part three in the books. Wow. Brain can be cleared now, Marcus, of that information.
Fucking finally.
And there you go. You look better already.
I have been carrying Scientology around in my brain for the last week.
Henry, the thing is, you can actually pretend like you are a Scientologist to get work now. Until, of course, they Google you. But just do that. Why not? Flip it. Who cares?
Yeah. Can you see this? Can you see these SPs behind me? I just find out the guy. It's whoever is standing in audition just staring forward, screaming at his sides, being like, stand up, sides! Sit down in the chair, sides!
That's good.
Thank you! Thank you!
Yeah, just constantly being like, I'm eating for two, you know, me and my theton. Stuff like that. And be like, I'm a 40. No, I'm only 35, but you know, I'm a 40.
I'm not gay anymore.
All right, well, yeah, that's it for this episode. We'll be back on the next one. Thanks to everyone, as always, for coming out to our last live show in Salt Lake City. Oh, Salt Lake City was fucking amazing.
Dude,
thank you
awesome.
To everybody at FanX who brought us out there. Thanks to everyone at Urban Lounge who came out and saw us. You guys are fucking amazing. And if you have not seen us yet and you want to see us live, go to cavecomedyradio.com/live to see all of the upcoming dates.
Yep.
And if you want advanced ticket sales for any shows that come up in the future, because all these shows that we're doing are selling out, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. For only $1, you get advanced ticket sales to every single upcoming show.
Yep.
Of course, there are rewards with each and every level after that. But
you
only
sound like
give
a,
to us.
Are we Scientology?
I was about to say, only give to
money
us.
Money means
only...
nothing. Money is not anything. Just give us our money. Let us handle your money for you. Money means nothing.
We will teach you nothing. Only give if you feel like you believe we deserve something.
And we are adding three new steps to our Patreon page.
Yeah, and you get stuff with each level. So thank you to everybody who's given so far. We very, very, very much appreciate it.
I gotta say, the people of Utah drank a lot more than I expected.
Woo!
And I really did appreciate the 1 ounce pours because listeners buy you shots and stuff, and oftentimes in Chicago, for example, or Salt Lake or St. Louis, it's a full pint of whiskey. Mm-hmm. They call it a shot. But in Utah, it was actually one shot, and it made the whole night better.
Totally.
So thank you guys so much for coming out, and thanks so much for supporting all the shows here on CCR. We got some new Able Against Top Hat shirts. We got some new Last Podcast on the Left shirts, which are awesome. And thanks for listening to Top Hat, Roundtable, Page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities, Wizard and the Bruiser.
Movie Sign with the Mads.
Yes, Movie Signs with the, with the Mads. All the shows here on CCR are doing so great, and it's all because of you. And you guys are really the best fans we could ever imagine.
Yeah, and Noel, Shane, and Danielle in Salt Lake City, you guys showed us a really great time, and thank you so much. Hail Satan. Follow us all on Twitter. Me, I'm at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel. Yep. On Instagram, at Ben Kissel 1, at Marcus Parks, at Dr. Fantasty. And follow Last Podcast on the Left on all of them, at LP on the Left.
And follow me on Spotify.
There it is. All right, everyone. Hail yourselves.
Hail me.
Hail Gein.
Woo, got through this one.
Magustalations. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for donating to our Patreon. Obviously, again, you guys know how much it means to us. You guys made this whole thing possible, and we love you so much for it. And thanks for supporting the show, listening to the content, and being the most amazing fans of all time. We can't wait to see you all at live shows soon.
It's going to be good. It's going to be better than good. It's going to be fine.
It'll be good with four O's.
Oh. Well, hail Satan, everyone. Thank you for your money.
Hail yourselves.
Hail Gein.
Hail me, please.
And a Magustalations.
Hail me, please.
Magustalations.
Ooh.